Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call, held on Wednesday, the 20th of June at 1730 UTC. On the call today, we have Kathy Kleiman, Christine Durain, Lori Schulman, Michael Graham, Philip Corwin, JC Chan, Susan Payne. Looks like we also have Greg Rafer on the audio only and Rebecca Tushnet. At this time, we do not have any apologies for today. From staff, we have Ariel Liang, Julie Hedlund, Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, and myself, Andrea Glandon, on call management. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it back over to you, Julie. Please begin.
Thanks so much, Andrea, and thank you, everybody, for joining. So today we are now looking at the draft survey on for the potential registrants, and we'll be working off the Google Doc, and we'll go ahead and put the link to the Google Doc into the chat, but you'll note also that it is in the notes pod. Up there it is in the chat, and it's also in the notes pod. So I did note that we have a message from Lori, and this one is actually relating to a qualification of registrants for survey. I think actually this must apply, perhaps might apply to the registrant survey. And Michael's agreeing with the questions and Lori's concerns. So, Lori, do you want to give us a little context for this?
Sure. Thank you. I sent this to the list because I knew we've discussed this two times already on the live calls, and I know we're on a time deadline. So I thought it might be appropriate to actually put it in more detail in writing for the analysis group. I'm happy to read it aloud with help people since I literally just sent it. But I still have concerns about how we're going to narrow down this pool of respondents for the registrants. You know, trademark owners can substantiate themselves as trademark owners through registrars and registries, of course, we know who they are. But I still have some concerns about identifying qualified registrants to take this survey. I think using a generalized sort of consumer-based paid test taker group could really have some pitfalls. It could also have some benefits, I'm just not sure, but I don't understand it well enough to have confidence that we'll be getting the respondents that we feel we need in order to answer the questions. So I've put detailed questions actually into written form, and I'm hoping that we can get a response. I'll read it aloud so the group knows what I've asked, and then we can defer it from here. So what I wrote was, I know that we are approaching today's meeting, and I wanted to reiterate something on the list rather than to absorb more time on the call. On Monday, I had asked about how registrants will be vetted for the survey. Stacy from the analysis group explained that there will be funneling-type questions that will qualify survey takers as registrants, and they will be funneled to the rest of the questions. I am still not clear on how the questions will be drafted in order to ensure that we are getting survey takers who understand what is being asked on their direct experience. Does AG have proposed draft questions already? If so, may we see them? Using paid test takers for random consumer-oriented surveys makes sense to me. For example, surveys on taste preferences or product comparisons. However, using that kind of pool for something as technical as our survey still troubles me. This goes back to something that Rebecca had explained regarding making sure that we are getting responses based on actual experiences rather than risking survey takers ranking or establishing preferred answers. If we want to query the understandability of claims notices, then I think whether one has seen them before or not may not matter. However, I do think if we are targeting users who have made actual decisions based on actual notices, then we should only be targeting known purchasers who have received those notices. It seems to me that only the registrars would know for sure, and I still have doubts about surveying the general public through a paid survey taking system. Therefore, I think it is appropriate to set some real parameters here. I want to make sure that we have the best pool possible given the technical nature of the survey. So I have further questions. How does AG Group plan to drill down to specific segments that we want? How will the demographic profile, or what will the demographic profile look like? How will we know that the respondents have actually attempted to purchase and have abandoned names based on claims notice? How will data be sifted after it's collected? For example, we should identify in advance what we are looking for in terms of age, employment, number of domains, number of abandoned, etc. I have asked this question twice, and I'm still stuck on some of the details of the response. Perhaps the analysis group can respond in writing, which would clarify what we are doing. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Lori. And this is Julie Hedlund from staff. And I've put the questions so that people can reference them into the notes section at the top of the notes section. And I'm wondering if any responses that not to put them too much on the spot that Stacey and Greg might be able to provide right now. And Susan Payne says, I must say this has been concerning me too, and I also don't really feel I have a good handle on what AG plans to do, so thanks, Lori, for raising this. And I see, Rebecca, you have your hand up.
Rebecca Tushnet, thank you. So I think Lori raises some really good concerns, but also her questions reflect, I think, a misunderstanding of the target group as we sent it to the analysis group. So, in particular, it is definitely not my understanding, and I believe if you review the documents, you'll see this, that we are targeting only people who have attempted to register a new GTLD and received a claims notice. That is emphatically not the case. We are targeting those. It would be great to find those, but those are not one does not qualify for the survey only by meeting that condition. If that were true, then more of Lori's concerns would be real. But in fact, the target is the kind of people who are interested in either expressing an interest in doing so in the future or have proven that they are interested in by trying and succeeding or failing to register a new GTLD in the past. But the standard definition of target groups for research about comprehension is people either who have done the thing in the past or who express a real intention to do so in the future, because obviously those are really the people that we're interested in. The people who are have only done it in the past are not actually as important. So it is emphatically the case that we need to carefully screen for people who meet those criteria, either past attempts, whether successful or not, or future willingness to consider. But that is a very different set of people, and I just want to make sure that we're all clear on that. Other than that, I think in terms of screening and selection, the analysis group will be able to discuss those screening questions usually when you do a subset of consumers in a market like this. There are various checks that you engage in to make sure that you've got the right set of people and not just people who say yes. Sometimes you do validation checks to follow up. Sometimes you ask for specific things, but I believe that the analysis group will be able to speak to that, but I just want to make sure that they're speaking to the correct group and not the subset with which Lori raised as if it were the full group. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Then Michael, and after Michael, I'd like to turn it over to Greg and Stacey. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Michael, for the record, and I think Rebecca's pointed out exactly what my concern is, and I think what Lori's question is, and that is how are we going to handle that that screening? So turn it over to Greg and Stacey.
Greg, Stacey, please.
Sure, thanks. This is Stacey. So yes, I think for both the registrant and the potential registrant surveys, the initial screening questions are, you know, have you registered in these domains or have you attempted, et cetera? We certainly can also work in additional questions, as Rebecca mentioned, that help us verify whether it seems that the registrants, that the people that are identifying themselves as registrants really are registrants that we are interested in. One potential area of confusion, for example, could be registering in a new TTLD versus having registered in the past in a legacy TLD. So some questions such as what TLD did you register in can help us make sure that we're talking to the right people. In terms of a demographic profile, with RNSS Research Now SSI's assistance, we'll be focusing on their North American panel. So registrants will be located in North America. The survey will only be distributed in English, so they'll be English-speaking. If we want additional information about the respondents, additional demographic questions could be added in the initial section of the survey if the sub-team would like to be able to cut the results by different types of demographics. I'm just looking back at the questions. So in terms of whether or not the respondents really did see a claims notice or not, because of the way the nature is being distributed, and I think I understand this from Lori's concern, because we're reaching out to people and asking them, did you attempt a registration, and then here's a claims notice, have you seen something like this before, that is really a recollection issue. An alternative way, but a more difficult way to do this would, of course, be to try to work with registrars so that they attempted to offer surveys to people as they are receiving claims notices. But I think that's much more difficult, and, of course, that would require coordination with registrars who would be willing to do that kind of thing. So there is some limitation there. However, I think due to the nature of the questions, this would be very difficult for someone to answer if they actually don't have experience with those notices. Greg, I don't know if you have anything else that you'd like to add.
No, sir. I think you did a good job covering it all, Stacey.
Great. Thank you very much, Greg and Stacey. Christine, please.
Thanks, Christine, for the transcript. Thanks, Stacey, for that overview. So I guess maybe I'm also a little bit confused then. So the first question as listed on the Google Doc basically asks sort of what category people fall into. Did you try to register a new GTLD or not? Is that the question that the N group is going to SSI, are they going to be sending that out to people in order to determine who gets the survey to start with? Because if you look at the general population of, let's just say, like a super connected country like North America where, you know, there's commercials for GoDaddy on television, if you ask any random sampling of the population, have you registered a domain name, they'll stare at you blankly. Like, it's such a tiny percentage of people overall that the statistically speaking, and maybe I'm putting words in Lori's mouth, but this is my question, but statistically speaking, if you just put it to quote your North American panel, you're going to get this tiny, tiny group of people that qualify at all. So are you putting the survey out to everybody in North America, or is that first question of did you ever, is that determining whether or not you even get the survey? Or maybe I'm just confused about the way the survey is administered. And also, I'm a little bit concerned, and this group needs to talk more about it, but not maybe right now, is this idea that we wanted to find out how the claims notice was taken in various places, and simply doing a survey of North American English absolutely does not accomplish that. And I know that was a very big concern to I think at least Kathy and maybe some other people in the group, making sure that other languages were represented. So I want to make sure that we have that covered at some point down the road. Thanks.
Rebecca, and So, Stacey and Greg, with respect to Rebecca's question, did you want to respond? And I'm just looking in the chat here, too, that if you delete and have abandoned names on based on a claims notice in my third bullet point, then I think it still addresses my concerns without being too narrow. This addresses Rebecca's point. And Michael is saying, Christine agrees, survey cannot be limited to North America to be as comprehensive as we need to be. And Lori is noting the community will tear the survey apart if it is confined to North America. All right.
This is Greg. If I quickly jump in, Julie. So with respect to kind of the administering of the survey to ResearchNow SSI's panel, what ResearchNow SSI will do is, using everyone that's a member of their North American panel, they will get that first screening question that's in the Google document, and then if they answer in the affirmative that they did, for example, register a domain name, then they'll go on to the rest of the survey. So that's at least kind of at a really high and somewhat simplistic level how it will function. And then I guess we'll probably need to have further discussions on kind of extending the survey beyond North America, because I can tell you kind of the budget was already very tight for doing this in North America, and to extend it in kind of using additional panels and additional languages adds cost pretty significantly.
Oh, thank you very much, Greg. That's quite helpful. Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks. Greg, could you explain a bit more about the cost? Because I'm assuming that this goes out by email to people who have given their details, or by phone or something, but it's not clear to me. I don't really understand why using a different panel of people would necessarily make a difference on the cost. And particularly since, you know, building on Christine's comments, it seems like, you know, when the initial screener question goes out to the North American panel, there may not be as many people kind of saying yes as you need. Can you give more detail on that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I mean, so I think, we've been talking with SSI as the survey's been kind of getting developed, and at least in discussions with them, they did not have any concerns that we would, kind of get too few responses based on kind of the extensiveness of their North American panel. And then on the cost side, it really comes down to, it really comes down to coding the survey in additional languages and then having to kind of review responses that are coming in not in English. Does that make sense? So it's really kind of the writing of the survey, the coding of the survey, and then reviewing the data if it happens to not be coming back in English.
Thank you very much, Greg. And I'll just note there's some – okay, it stopped now. I was hearing some background noise. So I guess I'd go back to – Lori, perhaps, since you had asked these questions in the first place, is this helpful to the questions that you have asked? Do you have more clarifications that you're seeking?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to sort of bottom line my concern. And I guess if I had to put it into one sentence, it would be, I'm concerned that the pool of these paid survey takers will not pick up the real applicants with real experience, given how small we know the population is. That's my concern. That's my concern, has been my concern all along, with making sure that questions are understandable, not too long, not just for the registrants group, but for all groups. Again, thinking back to response rate and thinking back to validity of the answers. I'm extremely sensitive to how this survey will be perceived by the community if we don't get this right. And I think it is worth taking the extra time to give us all a comfort level that the pools that we're approaching are the right pools. And as I said in my question, I think it's much easier to identify registrars, registries, and trademark owners than it is this extremely broad, complex, and dispersed registrant group.
Thank you very much. And Kathy, please.
This is Kathy. Valid concerns. I thought we might ask staff, Julie, Mary, whoever was involved in working at, as you know, we weren't co-chairs, subgroup team members weren't involved in the outreach to and the RFP on this. Could you talk a little bit or a lot about what you put into the RFP and, you know, what the guidance was on this particular issue? Because in some ways I would think we're now bound by the terms and the agreement of the RFP, which is what the analysis group responded to. So if you could provide some insight on that, it might give us some guidance as to what our flexibility is in this case. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. And so let me just call out a note that Mary put in the chat that the staff understanding is that the surveys will be conducted only in English, and this is a cost limitation. Perhaps the subteam and AG can discuss whether within that limitation the geographic coverage can be extended. Just some other notes. Lori says, I like that link. Let me ask if Mary or Ariel have a comment also on the constraints or the scope, shall I say, of the RFP. And I see Mary has her hand up. Please go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Julie. And Ariel can jump in to supplement. But as I typed in the chat, the understanding based on the published RFP, and we can put the link to that in the chat as well to refresh your memories, as well as the budget, was that the survey would be conducted in English only, and that in terms of reaching potential registrants, that the subcontractor used by analysis group, which is Research Now FSI, would use their methodologies to target a group of up to 200 respondents. So there are no specific details about how that is done aside from, paid survey takers, and that it will be done by SSI given their experience and ability to reach those respondents. Hopefully that's helpful. And Ariel, if I've left anything out that you can recall, please go ahead.
This is Ariel, for the record. There's nothing else to add. Mary has captured it all, and just to reemphasize, it's really due to a cost issue, and it's already operating under a very tight budget, and then to accommodate other languages will be a very, very difficult to achieve. So that's why we have to spell out in the RFP that the staff understanding is the survey should be conducted in English.
Thank you, Ariel. And then just noting in the chat, Christina saying, Section 5, Survey of Potential Respondents, relevant charter question 3 addresses translation. How did this get missed? Lori says, if we can't do the job correctly, then I have some fears about how this will be accepted by the community. And Michael, please.
Michael Graham for the record, and I will echo Lori's comment. I'm concerned about that. At the very least, it needs to go out to respondents in other countries, but not having it in other languages. I think all of us are aware of the criticism that we will receive in connection with whether or not this is a representative survey. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Michael. And I see Christine is typing. I want to ask if there's any more discussion with respect to the questions that Lori had posed, because I'm wondering now that we're coming to the top of the hour and we have only 30 minutes left, if we might proceed into a discussion of the draft survey. Christine says the claims notice itself is already translated. I understand the survey would cost more to translate. Yes, the costs are significant, Christine, as the staff has noted. Let's go to the survey draft. Yes, let's please do that. And again, we're following along in the survey in the Google Doc, and we will look at places where there are comments to be addressed. So starting with the introductory questions, question one.
This is Rebecca Tushnet. Could I get on the queue?
Yes, please, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Thank you, Rebecca Tushnet. I just want to say, at least with respect to my comments, I think they all are just either the same comment or the placeholder saying see previous comment on the registrant survey, since these are really the same questions. I wonder if we, for time's sake, we could ask people to identify anything that they think is new or different, because I know that my comments are not new or different from the previous survey. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. That's an excellent suggestion. So may I ask, as people are looking at the survey, is there anything that they want to bring forward that is new or different from those concerns that were raised in the similar questions in the registrant survey? And I see Christina's hand up, and Christine, before I go to you, let me also ask Stacy and Greg to be looking at the survey and thinking about whether or not there are questions that you might have about some of the comments in the survey that might be different from issues that have been raised previously. And Christine, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine. Thanks, Rebecca, for that comment, because I was actually really confused looking at this, thinking, I thought we'd made all these comments before. So I don't really have anything new to add on any of the comments up. I mean, because I think it's good. Again, repeated, I think I see the intersection here of the registrant and potential registrant. So I to the extent that these are, you know, I don't want to restate anything, but it seems like if this is a potential registrant survey, you know, the people in Group C actually would have gotten the registrant survey, in my opinion, or should be redirected to the registrant survey. So that's, I guess, maybe my one new comment here. Secondly, I'm glancing at question 1I for if respondent is in Group B or D, which is for people who registered a long time ago or have never attempted but would consider, which I think is our primary demographic for this survey. I'm liking the grid and the idea of influencing decisions at all. And so if nobody has any other comments on any of the other parts, because I agree that it's pretty duplicative, I'd like to spend a couple of minutes just looking at this section. Because we talk about the cost of the registration. I don't know why money, time involved in completing, someone registering already claimed my domain name. I don't know almost 4 of ICANN calls this morning. I don't know why those options are being presented unless they're to juxtapose against, you know, the one we really want to know, which is receipt of the claims notice that they've seen. And I'm trying to look up and see if, like, it looks like the header says they've seen a claims notice, or no, maybe not, because it says header says only for E through G. So for QI, they haven't even seen a claims notice yet. So how would receipt of a claims notice, provide notice for respondent to review. So I'd like to talk about that. Maybe analysis group could weigh in. At that point, you get to see the claims notice, but it's only 1 of 5, and 4 of those factors are completely irrelevant to the survey. So I was worried, and maybe I'm trying to channel Rebecca from the last call, I'm worried that in this case, you're providing a whole bunch of options that are kind of chaff, and we're going to miss the wheat, which really is this receipt of a claims notice and what they think about the claims notice if you're in Group B or D, which is our primary demographic focus. So in my opinion, everything before Q1I is either for a current registrant or, I don't know, someone else. So can we talk a little bit about that organization, please, because I think that's the part that's different. Thanks.
Thanks, Rebecca. And let me ask if Greg or Stacy have some guidance that you could provide us as far as the organization.
Thanks. This is Stacy. So I think everyone has identified that this section is very similar, if not the same, as what it was suggested in part of the registrant survey. And I do recall for the section in the registrant survey, we discussed some reordering of the questions. And so I think that same reordering could also apply here. For this question, Q1I, which is this grid, the question is, as you consider the possibility of registering a domain name in a new GTLD, please rank how important these factors are. I think I understand, Christine, that you were suggesting that the real focus of this question is how important receipt of a claims notice is on the decision, and these other options are not that important. I may be misspeaking, but I would guess that this question came out of an attempt to make a closed-end question out of an open-ended question that asked about why registration would not be completed, or how a claims notice would have affected the registration or something like that. And so we suggested giving the respondent potential, identifying potential factors that were going into their decision, so that it would help help provide some context to the importance that the respondent gives to the claims notice. So if the respondent says the claims notice is sort of important, what does that really mean? What else are they considering, and what else is important? Maybe they are considering everything else that is involved with the registration process, or once they have the domain name, what they're going to do in terms of a website, et cetera. So that was the intent of offering additional options here in this grid.
Thanks so much, Stacy. That was quite helpful. I have Christine and then Susan, please.
Thank you. This is Christine. Stacy, that was helpful. So I'm looking at this, and maybe because this is so much shorter than the other ones, I'm feeling like the potential respondents are getting a short shrift. But at the same time, I'm also trying to be really excited about it, because a short survey means we're more likely to get a lot of responses. So yay us. So we're spending a few questions with Group C, which is the people that tried to register and didn't, which is good, because we want to get those people. We want to get the people that tried and didn't keep going, because that's a huge problem. So we spent a fair amount of time with them. Then we jump down to question Q1I, which is, you know, what are the following that rank those set factors? Now, I don't know that we need to limit this question to Groups B or D, which is the people who haven't actually even really tried, that just might be interested in. So I'm wondering if we want to make this Q1I also apply to people in Group C, because, you know, even if they've done it, you know, we might want to juxtapose or compare someone who's actually attempted versus people who haven't attempted. So I'm wondering if we're being too limiting by not letting Q1I cover everybody. And then the second question is, for these B and D people, are we getting, how do I word this? We are asking B and D people, which is people who have never registered yet and are just seeing a claims notice for the first time, and or registered a really long time ago and probably maybe haven't seen a claims notice in a really long time. We're asking them two questions, essentially. That's it. That's the whole survey for those people, are two questions. First question is, of these five factors, what's the most likely to influence your decision? Oh, by the way, here's a claims notice. Okay, I understand what you're trying to do there. And then the second question is, why would you decide to abandon it if you saw the claims notice? And then we don't ask anything else. And this is really a question maybe more for the group, is, do we feel like we're getting all of the information? This is our chance. Do we have a follow-up question? Do we, you know, I know we have our open text field, which is good, but this is our chance. These people are seeing two questions. Is there a third? Is there something else that we need to ask them while we have them on the line? Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Susan, please.
Yes, thanks. I'm looking at the same section that Christine has so kindly highlighted. And I'm just not really understanding what the point of asking this is. I mean, I understand what Stacey was saying, and it's to kind of, you know, to see the receipt of the claims notice in the context of other factors. But it feels like this is kind of, this question, no matter how interesting, is kind of going to the wrong people, because these are people who are only potentially registrants. So, you know, they haven't done a registration in the past. They haven't experienced claims notices. They haven't been put off registering because of a claims notice. So suddenly we're showing them a claims notice, and then we're going, like, you know, rate this in terms of this plus cost plus, you know, time to register. You know, like, I don't think these people are in a position to really be making that decision. They've hardly spent, you know, they've hardly ever seen a claims notice. And I'm just not sure what we get out of this.
Thanks very much, Susan. I'm just calling some things out from the chat. Michael said, Stacey, your explanation, turn open-ended question to closed question is good. I was thinking the additional questions were not that interested in help mask the question we are asking so as not to prejudice answers. Michael says, Christine, agree we should include C as well as B and D in the I chart questions. Kathy says, that's interesting, Christine, a good possibility to think about. Christine says, plus one, Susan, yes, it feels sudden and like it's lacking context. And Christine says, I'm not opposed to a short survey. I just want to make sure we're getting it all. Not seeing any hands up at the moment. I guess I'd be looking for suggestions as to whether or not we want to change the questions here, add questions here, or provide some additional context.
Rebecca Tushnet, please.
Yes, please, Rebecca.
So, thank you. Rebecca Tushnet, for the record. I don't mind a short survey. I think it's great, unless we have specific things that we want to ask. I'm not exactly sure what they'd be. I think that the objections that I'm hearing are objections to the consumer survey form. That is, it is a comprehension survey. So for these people, what does the notice mean to you? You know, how would you think about it? And that's how these work. I mean, because that's what a survey is. You ask people away from the actual decision. Now, I personally would love it if we could get some of the people we've discussed, you know, maybe it's, the registries, if they're willing to send it to lists of people that they have, maybe people who attempted but didn't, or people who attempted and succeeded. We should absolutely pursue that avenue and send the surveys to them too. But for, you know, this group, that's what a comprehension survey is. Everyone, I think, agrees that it isn't perfect, but it does give you more information than you had. So I guess I'm not worried about objections to the nature of the survey. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. And I have Christine, please. And I will note Susan's comment in the chat. I don't object to a comprehension survey. I just don't see that this is it. And Lori says, I thought this was not a comprehension survey. And so Christine and then Kathy, please.
Thank you. This is Christine. So my ending was that this really is a comprehension survey for potential respondents. Other people, not so much. But for potential respondents, it really is supposed to be short and sweet. Here's a claims notice. What do you think of it? So I do appreciate the short and sweet. I do appreciate the comprehension. I want to make sure that we're not going to have the people in the full working group poking holes in it, because we could have found out more information. So I just want us to give this some thought. As somebody coming into the survey, I've never attempted to register a domain name, but I would consider doing so. Okay, great. The next question I get is, what country do you live in? United States. Very good. Now I see a question that says, as you consider the possibility of registering a domain name, now this person has never done it. They don't even understand how you go about it, possibly. They maybe saw the GoDaddy commercial only when Danica was on it. That was it. So please rank how important the following factors would be in determining whether or not you complete a registration. Well, leaving aside the fact that I think the wording is even more complex because people don't understand GTLD or registration and those sorts of words. So I'm going to say money, of course, is the most important. Time involved in the completing the process. Oh, what is this receipt of a claims notice? Okay, click here to see that. What if I got that? Well, I don't even know what that is, so I'm going to say doesn't influence my decision. Now I go to Q1J, which is only the third question I'm presented with at this point, or fourth question, not including the first two demographic questions. So now I see, okay, so of the following reasons, why would you not proceed with your registration if you saw this claims notice? Well, we don't even know that they would not proceed. We just ranked it as being not important at this point. But again, we're giving them the option to look at the claims notice, and they're going to be given three options. I don't understand it, but it seems important. I would think it would expose me to legal risk. Okay. Or the process of completing registration is taking too long and would feel difficult to continue. They have no context to click number three. Zero context. They have no idea if it's taking long or not. My guess is people are going to say, I don't understand it and it seems important, because they wouldn't know. Now the survey is over. We learned nothing except for they thought that the claims notice would probably be low impact on their decision making because they didn't know what it was. And they thought it was, I don't understand it and it seems important. What did we learn? If that's the path that most people are going to follow, and let's assume that we're right on that for just a moment, what have we learned? Have we learned what we came to learn? And if so, great, I'll stop talking and that's fantastic. But if we haven't learned what we came to learn, then I think we need to figure out what questions are missing. That's all. Thank you.
Rebecca Tashnet, please.
Yes, thank you. I have Kathy and then Rebecca. Please, Kathy.
I'll be happy to go after Rebecca.
Thank you, Kathy. Rebecca, please.
Rebecca Tashnet. So maybe this is my misunderstanding of how the survey is going to work, because I admit that I've not been able to follow every path because it's presented in this linear way. So I thought, and I apologize if I'm wrong, that in fact you had the option to say it wouldn't change my decision, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, and we're given a chance to explain. So I think that if I'm wrong, then I absolutely agree with Christine that we should actually give them the option to say, I don't think that would change it. But maybe the AG people can speak to what the path would be for someone who saw that, and then if they would only get the, you know, I'd stop because option, then I'm going to add my weight with Christine to say, no, we should give them multiple options from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. And I'll just note that Michael has also a follow-up question in the chat. Would AG suggest that we use separate registrant and potential registrant surveys, or a single survey that has two tracks based on answers? This could provide another means for ensuring qualification of survey takers. So to Rebecca's question and to Michael's question, perhaps before we go to you, Kathy, if we could see if Greg and Stacy could speak to those two questions.
Sure, this is Stacy. So for the first questions about how we get to the question about how the claims notice has an effect on the respondent, initially in the grid where we're asking, you know, how do these different factors influence your decision, and there's receipt of a claims notice, if they select it wouldn't influence me at all, or I don't know, I'm not sure, then they will not see the follow-up question. Only if they say that it would influence them at some level, whether it's weekly or absolutely, anywhere in between there, then they will see this follow-up question of what are the reasons
that this claims notice would affect you. This last question does assume that if the claims notice has an effect on them, then they would abandon the registration instead of being strongly influenced by the claims notice to complete the registration. But that's how the filtering is planned to work on those last two questions. And then on, now that I've answered that, I'm sorry, I've forgotten what the second question was.
Hi, Stacey. It's Julie Hedlund from staff. It's in the chat, actually. It's from Michael Graham. So question, would AG suggest that we use separate registrant or and potential registrant surveys or a single survey that has two tracks based on answers? This could provide another means for ensuring qualification of survey takers. Christine is also interested in how the surveys intersect.
Yeah, and this is Greg for the record. That's the latter is our intention. So potential respondents to the survey will see the very first question in this document, and then depending upon their answer to it, they'll either be funneled into the registrant survey or the potential registrant survey. We just divided the two documents up to focus on each of the two groups independently for this discussion.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg.
This is Rebecca Tashnet, if I can
get to you. Please. Go ahead, Rebecca, and then we'll go to Kathy. Thank you.
So I just wanted to follow up on that. So I had been perhaps under the misimpression that if someone said, no, it wouldn't affect my decision, then they'd get some follow-ups along the lines of, I believe I have the right a chance to explain why it wouldn't affect their decision, too. And I would like to ask for that, because I agree with Christine that that's important information, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. And Kathy, please.
So, pausing, do we have a note about that Christine and Rebecca agreement?
And yes, we are considering this. Thank you, Kathy.
Okay. Two quick things. One is about the original materials that we're dealing with, and then one is about something that I came to notice only because Christine pointed our attention to it. So the first is that this actually does seem fairly close to the questions we sent to the analysis group, and I'll just read it to you. Have you ever registered a domain name? Do you plan on registering a domain name in the next year? This is a potential registrant survey, of course. Would you consider one of these new domains? Have you attempted to register a domain name in one of these domains? If no, terminate the survey. So, and then it goes into questions that appear to have been put into the table. So, if yes. So, I think that's I think analysis group is working with what we sent them. The other is with Q1I, I just wanted to point out, I'm not sure the last part of the last element of the table is one we want to keep. Someone else already having claimed my domain name. If someone else has already registered that domain name in that TLD, you can't register it. There is no possibility of registering a domain name in that new GTLD with that second level domain. So we might want to delete that last part, that last entry in the table, Q1I. Suggestion to delete it, because I'm not sure what it means. It would influence my decision if I could not register that domain name or in the process, because you'd be looking at a different domain name. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Does anybody have any objections to deleting that last item in the grid? And again, that is the one that says someone else already claimed my domain name.
And this is Kathy. Maybe the analysis group meant something different for that, so I'll leave open that possibility as well. That doesn't necessarily have to be answered in real time, but it's possible that something else, some other interpretation is out there. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Stacey, Greg, anything that you would want to say about the inclusion of that item in the grid?
This is Greg. No, I think it's a really good catch, Kathy. So we'll delete that last row in that grid.
Great. Thanks so much. I'm looking for hands. While people are perhaps still thinking, coming back to the question of the surveys being done in English and then if we wanted to go beyond North America, but still do the surveys in English, I guess this is a question to analysis group, could we do that? I mean, we recognize, of course, that ideally we'd love to be able to do it in all different languages, but the costs are just too prohibitive to do that, given, you know, our very, very tight budget. But if we stuck with English, would we still be able to go beyond just the North American set of panels?
Okay. And this is Greg again. Thanks, Julie. Why don't we loop back with ResearchNow SSI and get a sense for how, if any, that might affect the cost of the registrant, potential registrant survey.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Does anybody have any other questions with respect to the survey? Is the discussion with respect to question 1I, are there any further questions or comments? I should ask Greg and Stacy, is the discussion clear on what we're asking for? I mean, there's an agreement on a follow-up reason for notice not being a factor. I think there's understanding on how the surveys will branch and filter. Greg and Stacy, do you have any questions with respect to this this survey, and or does anybody else have anything else they want to add?
I at least do not have any questions, but I don't know if Stacy does.
This is Stacy. I also do not have any questions right now. Thank you.
And thank you. And Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine. I, at the risk of sounding contrary, I just think our chairs are going to have to be prepared to answer the question from the working group. Why did we not take this survey in multiple languages? It is one of the actual questions that we decided on as one of the new charter questions. And when I say, I mean the revised, restated, neutralized charter questions. And I think that we're not going to be able to answer the question. The question is, what's the impact of translations, and are they informing domain name applicants of the scope and limitation of trademark holders' rights? And when you dive into that discussion and you pull up that transcript and you listen to what we talked about, it was about making sure that not only does the claims notice meet its need of informing people in the United States and English speakers, but people who speak other languages. And so we have questions about even asking registrars, do you offer the claims notice in other languages? So I think that we're going to have that question to answer to, and we're going to have to be able to say something, and hopefully the answer isn't, well, we just can't afford it. I don't know what the answer is. This is not a question for today, but I think we're going to get asked that question at some point, so we should probably start thinking about how we're going to answer that. Thanks.
Oh, thank you very much, Christine, and I think from the staff side, as we've tried to suggest, the short answer is indeed that in the very, very tight budget that we had, there is not the budget to translate the survey into multiple languages, but staff can certainly help to provide some background on that as well to assist the chairs. Let me ask now that we have 4 minutes left here, analysis group is going to go back and make the revisions based on all of these discussions. One possible path for then reviewing those revisions that might be more expedient is, if staff could suggest it, perhaps that each of the authors of the surveys became sort of the point person to review the revised version, rather than bringing the sub-team back for multiple meetings to go over those revisions. Let me put that out there as a possible way forward to review the revised versions that we will get from the analysis group. Christine, please.
This is Christine. I cautiously do not object to having the original drafter be the first person to ensure alignment with what was originally there and to actually go back and compare it to the charter questions and to our recollection, because each of our point people did sort of take the lead on discussing this with analysis group. I believe that the entire working group needs to, or the entire sub-team needs to approve all of the questions or see them all, have the opportunity to look at them all at least. Just, you know, as a sort of making sure that we are all in agreement because we all have various recollections and memories of the things we've talked about. So I'm fine with the first cut, but I don't think that we want individual people to completely sign off. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. And I'm glad you pointed that out because that wasn't really the intent of my – that's not what I meant or the staff meant. So thank you for clarifying that. And I know Kathy's asking about the time frame. And may I ask Mary if you wanted to address that question, please?
Sure. Thank you, Julie. This is Mary from staff. And with where we are, there is the ICANN62 meeting pretty much all of next week where the working group's agenda is already quite full. So there is currently a vision for another sub-team meeting next week. The week following, which would be the first week in July, is typically a week where there are no working group or sub-team meetings. So the hope is that during this period, the analysis group can go back and update, revise, refine the proposed questions based on the information and feedback from the sub-team. Then the sub-team, like Julie was saying, with the initial sweep being done by the person who led that particular group or, target group, the sub-team can look at what analysis group has produced. Bear in mind that even after the questions are finalized, and we had suggested that for the full working group, given that the sub-team has done a lot of work with the analysis group, that the questions are sent, of course, when finalized to the working group, but that it doesn't go through the same process again. Even so, and having said that, if you look ahead, if we look at mid-July at the time when the sub-team can review and get back with the analysis group, there will need to be some time for the analysis group to program the surveys and beta test them, roll them out hopefully on a rolling basis, which is a long-winded way of saying, in answer to Kathy's question, that this likely puts the survey issuances out toward the later part of July, so late to end July, and if we therefore allow for something like a month minimum or thereabouts for meaningful results to come back, it means the analysis group would only be reporting back to us in late or toward the end of August. I hope that's helpful, Kathy and everybody, and we can certainly take that in more detail if you wish.
Thank you, Mary, and I see we're right at the end time, but I'll just note the question in the chat. Thank you, Christine, about asking if we could try to have a meeting in Panama. We've already had many complaints in the community about scheduling conflicts and conflicting meetings, and so the schedule is not only full, it's really overbooked. So I think that we don't know how we would be able to try to fit something in there, and apologies for that. And just that Kathy is saying, given that URS is taking a little longer, I think the timing with analysis group will work. So then next steps to capture, we will await then the revised versions of the survey from analysis group. We will, look for the survey authors to look through the revised versions, but also these will be going to the full sub-team, and anyone, of course, can comment. And Mary is saying all this will put a bit of pressure on the overall phase one timeline, but that is perhaps inevitable and necessary. And so then, once we get the final versions, those will go to the full working group, but just as a reference, and then there'll be a programming phase, and then towards the end of July, perhaps to get the surveys out, as Mary noted. So does anybody have anything else they want to raise today? We're 2 minutes after the end of the hour, and we do appreciate everybody staying on. I have Susan, please.
This is just a really quick one. Just I think the thing that we haven't really had a conversation about, leaving aside the chat we had at the very beginning about the registrants, potential registrants, but we haven't really had a conversation about where are the survey respondents for the other groups being selected from? I mean, I know their registries and their registrars and so on, but we had some early discussion about whether it just should be new GTLD registries and whether it should exclude brands and that kind of thing. I think, you know, during the period between now and this sort of end of July date when the surveys would go out, I think we all need to feel comfortable that the right people are being sent this survey or these surveys.
Thank you, Susan. So staff can take that back with AG, and perhaps we can provide some guidance in that respect and bring that back to the sub-team on the list. And as you say, in this time period where we're not meeting, perhaps there can be some discussion on the list on that as well. And I see Christina's agreeing. And great, thanks. Yes, thank you, Susan. Thank you, everyone, and again for all of these meetings. This has been extremely helpful, and we thank you so much for spending all of this time. So we'll send some notes around, and we'll hope to see some of you in Panama. And for those traveling, safe travels. Thank you, everyone, then. And, Andrea, I think this meeting can be adjourned.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.